Welcome to Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Sean.
This is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. Tonight, we're always socially distanced, but we're in our normal time zones, East Coast, Central, West Coast. Ross is in the Northeast, I'm in the Midwest, and Sean's on the West Coast. There's no news. We don't want to talk about the news because it's all boring.
Generally, usually is.
Ross, you have literally no updates.
Yeah. Same thing in my camp. Yeah. Same here. I still have the CarPlay unit from Grom sitting in the box. I haven't had a chance to throw it in the truck yet. I'm hoping on Saturday because it's like a pretty much fully dash out install. And that's not generally conducive to baby's nap and eating schedule. So hopefully on Saturday I'll get that done.
I want to give you the heads up because it's supposed to pour like crazy here tomorrow. So that probably gets to you about a day later. So,
well, that's fun. Well, it was
your lack of,
it was 92 degrees here today and it's supposed to be like 60 over the weekend.
It's been raining in SoCal for like 4 months. And finally we've had like a week without rain. I still have standing water in my backyard in the grass because the ground is so saturated. There's nowhere for it to drain. There's nowhere for it to soak. It's like I stepped out into a puddle in my middle of my grass. I was like, what is this?
What state are we in? Did you guys see the Fort Lauderdale airport?
Yeah, I got flooded today. I saw they had to shut it down. It looked like a lake over the ramp.
I flew out of there on Monday morning.
Oh, isn't Formula One there soon?
Yes, there are pictures of the paddock at the Dolphin Stadium where the track runs through, and it is just totally underwater. There's like, I mean,
dude, it's two weekends away.
Yeah, it's very soon. There's a lot of questions about it, but
I lied. It's 3 weekends away. It's May 7th.
What day? It's next weekend when this airs.
It will have just have happened. I was off on my dates.
Future us will be past it, but current us, we're not there yet. So
So that's all my updates. Chris has, I don't know how we're going to do this because we're recording a show and you're talking about stuff that already came out. So
the trip we will have discussed like 2 weeks prior to this, Russ. So we'll definitely have covered that. But the Sequoia did survive Moab, mostly stock Sequoia, Toyo Open Country AT3s, Tandem Off-Road Sliders, RCI Off-Road Skid Plates, Tandem Off-Road Rear Diff Skid Plate. And that's it. That's all I did to the truck. I did put it in the high suspension setting once with the adjustable high control for Wipeout Hill. That was the only other really adjustment I made to it. I do have something that I don't really want to talk about on the episode, Russell. I'm going to talk about now is like the 12-volt fridge that I purchased. I don't want to talk about the brand name yet because I'm still waiting on an answer from customer service.
What color is it?
Silverish.
Is it silverish and dark gray?
On the roof? Or the lid?
Just asking.
generally speaking. Yeah, we're pretty monochromatic.
Sounds like there's a know something here.
It might be. But no, the thermostat, I would set it and then it would always be 2 degrees higher than whatever I set it at. And it was like, well, the troubleshooting things is like, did you put a lot of warm stuff into it? Like, no, after a period of 7 days and I ran it on the AC adapter for a while too. Like, it's not what's in it. Like, I just want to have some clarification on whatever brand, that is.
I've definitely seen, especially if they're off the battery. So there's a couple of things. One is that your voltage, most of them have a high, medium and low setting. And
right.
High setting is too aggressive, and usually the medium setting is probably too aggressive too. So I usually run it on the low because it protects the battery circuit so you can still start up the vehicle. So sometimes it's running up against that. The other thing is if you plug in your 12-volt into a vehicle, Toyotas are notorious for this. Even though you have a 12-volt in the cargo area, it has the tiniest 16-gauge wires you've ever seen. What happens is the fridge detects the voltage drop just because the wires are so thin. So when it cycles on to a full cycle to cool it down, it thinks there's not enough voltage coming through and it'll trigger the low voltage warning on it. And then it won't cool the fridge. But then when it has like a small cycle, it'll do it. So I always tell people one of two things, either wire directly to the battery with one of those plugs that you can buy. And I like those anyway for off-roading because if you look at the end of your plug tip, you can disconnect it, you screw it off, and it's got prongs. Those prongs screw into the proper receptacle. And when you do it that way, it can't jiggle free off road. But otherwise, if you have a Dometic PLB 45 or a Jackery or something like that, sometimes it's better to plug your fridge into that and then plug that into your inverter of your car to charge it while you're driving than it is to plug into the 12 volt power point, especially overnight when the car's not running, because it'll detect the voltage drop because the manufacturers are cheap pieces of shit and they never give you a high enough gauge wire in the back. I would venture to guess that if you tried that fridge hooked up directly to the battery, that you may see the proper thermostat. I've also seen a range where I've had fridges that were a couple degrees off all the time, and that's just how they were, and I got used to it and it was no big deal. And I've had ones that are dead nuts or actually too cold. So it takes a little finagling with your loadout to figure out what's, you know, where you want it. But wiring is always a deal. Just because it plugs in doesn't mean it has enough power for it.
And that literally, no, that's fantastic advice, because that is exactly what came up. So I airing up, I had a little air compressor, and of course put it into the same, I did it in the one in the front, but the 12 volt on the front. Oh, and they were like, "How you doing over there?" And I was like, "Hey, I'm getting there. It took me 25, 30 minutes.
Later.
What'd you air down to? Just out of curiosity.
One time I thought it was 25, and when I finally put the air compressor on it, it was down to 22. And I was like, that's a little lower than I wanted to be, being close to 5,800 pounds. I wanted 25-ish. And so the next time I aired down, I used an ARB deflator, and then I tried to put it right at 30. And I want to say when I went and put the compressor on, the compressor, it's a digital reading, digital measurement.
I would always trust the car more than the digital or otherwise inflator gauges, just because they have to be right on for the federal government. They're pretty precise. Whereas your inflator gauge is usually bouncing around in your vehicle. So
that can take a beating.
Yeah. So, and the other thing is, when you start airing down, depending on what tire size you have, is sometimes you get to a certain point and they'll burp out a little bit of air. You know, if you hit a rock,
the seat is on the bead. I just got these guys that I'm
going to
test on the
Stons, or
these are Boulder Tools, which are the knockoffs.
Yeah. But I use ones it's Adventure
Imports.
I'll think about them. They're the mil-spec ones that come from Europe. They're from the UK, and you can get them either in rock crawler settings, which is 2 PSI to 10, or you can get them in just the regular off-road ones, which are 12 PSI to 20, and you just spin it and lock it in, walk away. They're awesome. Those are my favorite ones. I've tested every single one of them.
Exploration Outfitters?
No, I'll find them.
I think I have to dial these in, so I'm gonna possibly find it over the weekend.
I love the ones that have Power Tanks makes a really good one, but then you have to have that valve in your wheel for the monster valve. And there's a bunch of ones out there, but these ones that I've been using for the past, I don't know, probably 10 years, are definitely my favorite. They're pricey and they're hard to come by because they're not always in stock. But
the pricey part is how I ended up with these, the Boulder Tools, because it was $18 on sale. You know,
it's Extreme Outback is the company. They're the military multi-level select. You can buy them from Extreme Outback directly, but they're they're not super cheap.
Oh yeah. Haven't even heard of this brand. Interesting.
That's a lot of air products.
Extreme Outback. If you guys want to check that out, is where I get my deflators from. They're $100 each. I got two of them, and but I've I've had them for 10 years, and they're freaking amazing.
I love that they have something called the no loss tire caps, just because I lose those things all the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah, they've got the little thing. And the other nice thing is most of those tire caps have a seal at the end of it, so even if you were to get a rock or something in your valve stem, it'll keep air from leaking out, which is nice to have.
Clever.
Yeah,
very clever. All right, so you're down in the 20s, so before we move subjects. Chris, do you want to talk about the LX, the 470?
So
potential updates coming?
2000 Lexus LX 470 recently acquired, John. I almost wrecked a kid in traffic today as he oogled it. We were at a stoplight where the straight lane is the right lane. The left turn lane is obviously the left turn lane, and the light went green, and he did not have an arrow, and I started forward and he was still looking at me. So he went with me as he went like out into traffic. And I was like, dude, stop. Like, just pay attention to driving first. But like, it's not often with the stuff that I drive that there's somebody like trying to snap pictures out of their rear view mirror or whatever. And he would definitely, the LX was definitely on his radar today. So we're approved to hunt for a step. It does have an Ironman 4x4 2-inch lift kit on it, so it's a little taller. My wife's a little shorter. She was like, we need something. I'm tired of like heaving myself into this thing or jumping into it.
The jump, yeah.
Yeah, and it's got tell a little bit of an oak. Say that again, Sean.
Just tell her it'll keep her young. Wives really like when you take their concerns and then give them a reason why they should not be concerned about it. Trust me,
perfectly every time.
Wives, I can tell you all the truth.
It's like, I'm pretty sure you know.
Yeah.
But no, I am hunting for a slider that'll have a little bit of step on it, and then probably looking at skids just in case. After Moab, I feel like I want skids forever. Like I just need more skids in my mind. I don't want to be one of those guys that's like, no, I'll just lift it more. Like, just go ahead and put the protection underneath and then you don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not that heavy anymore. So that's all of my updates. It's really kind of boring. But Sean's with us. And we've been trying to do this for close to 2 months now. Getting Sean on the show. About right.
I've had a busy start to the year. So
you've been all over the place. And some of that comes on the tail end of some career changes on your end. The demise of the four-wheeler term and the new beginnings that you have. So why don't you tell us about that a little bit, and then kind of, I want to hear about the Nissan trip and whatnot. So yeah, give us some updates. The last time you were on, it was a little different.
Yeah, a lot different. So I was at four-wheeler just about 20 years, and they made the decision at the end of last year that they're going to discontinue the magazine, and you know, some of us got jettisoned, and others of us got reassigned to other places inside the company. And I was one of the ones who was out. So I had to kind of figure out, I already had a little bit of a plan in place of what I wanted to do. And I will say that Motor Trend was extremely gracious in the exit for me. They gave me time. It wasn't, you know, a lot of companies these days perp walk somebody out, but they recognize the value that I brought to the company for 20 years. And I had a few months because they actually wanted me to help wind down the business and do some other things. So kudos to them for you know, being super professional about it and actually making the whole process, you know, it sucks. You're somewhere for 20 years and they make a business decision and you're you know, have to deal with the consequences of it. But it was as smooth as possible. And as part of that, I took ownership of the Truck Show Podcast, which we're now going into our sixth season. We just signed Nissan as our presenting sponsor. So that's great news. We've got a bunch of great companies signed on throughout the year. Bill Stein, Onyx Off-Road, Banks Power, Hellwig, just a bunch of great brands that were willing to say, hey, I know you're on your own. We're going to, you know, continue that ride with you. So that's been great. The biggest change was I spent the first six weeks of the year building the room I'm in now, which is the pod shed. So without a home at Motor Trend to record, there are very few options. And so we looked at the third, single side of my garage. We looked at an extra bedroom, all that kind of stuff. And there's my friend Rich who did all the drywall, but we just got to a point where I'm like, none of that makes sense. I got the on-air light. In fact, it's on right now. That tells my girls that, I'm recording, so don't come running out in the backyard.
It's better than the hotel, like, do not disturb dad.
Yeah, right. And it's better than the extra bedroom upstairs where you can hear everybody running around yelling and, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I need your laundry downstairs. Oh, yep. It's like back in the day when you'd be on AOL and your mom would pick up the phone. you know, come on,
get me. We were just talking about that. I need the internet. I need the phone. Yeah.
So started with a 10x12 tough shed building. Those guys were awesome to deal with. And then we did, as you see, we got acoustic panels behind. It's a little bit messy right now, but we did this cool cork ceiling. And we'll give you a quick tour. So we've got a Sony 42-inch TV. We've got a Dr. Pepper fridge and a nice printer. Some of the you know, gifts from our guests there. The American flag was a gift from one of our listeners. And got this cool acoustic curtain for when we're recording. So it basically blocks out the echo, and then you roll it up. So I've got a window with a screen and all that. Nice. And then back on this side over here, got our whiteboard reminding us of stuff to do. And we've got a bunch of bourbon there, and it's a 4-mic setup, so we have 4 people total in here at once. Jay gifted the podcast studio the Traction Off sign. Is kind of like a, hey, we're on our own, we don't have to really listen to anybody else. And then we got a Rode Procaster 2 board over there, which we invested in. So really, you know, for me going out on my own, I borrowed a lot of money from me, so I got to start myself back. But I was fortunate enough to be in a position where we could build out the studio, and the acoustics are great in it. I got a mini split that we're installing probably tomorrow or Saturday. And my buddy was over, and he says, "Oh, dude, the TV's great. I bet the Angels games are going to be great in there." And I'm like, and my wife's sitting right there, and he's like, "Yeah, dude, you're probably just going to tell your wife that you're in there recording, and you're going to be in the only air-conditioned room at the house watching baseball." And I'm like, what are you doing? And I watched the I had not thought about that. And
picked you under the bus on that.
Yeah. If you abuse the on-air sign, like, it's over. Like, there's no trust there anymore. And I told my friend he was not allowed to come drink in the pod shed with me and watch baseball. He's the first person to be banned from the property for breaking the man code.
You need a band board.
Yeah. So anyway, we were able to build this studio. We've had, I think we're probably 10 shows deep, maybe 9 so far out of this room. The acoustics and the show sound just like they did before. And if you're a follower, or even a casual listener of the Truck Show podcast, we basically called season 2. So basically from my ownership on, we just went from season 1 as the old Motor Trend owned shows, and season 2 is everything going forward, which is the stuff that I own. So Jay's still involved. I own it outright, but he still gets his cut, so it works out well. We've got
solid.
Well, for him, I mean, he's happy, I think. And then we've got, you know, some great sponsors and advertisers, and the beginning of this year we have already started off really strong with some really good numbers for us. So we didn't lose a lot. I think our the audience rallied behind us. And then the other thing is, mm-hmm. launched a website, truckshowpodcast.com. Eventually, there's going to be some more stuff. We're going to have a merch store on there with t-shirts. We're going to do limited runs of like 50 t-shirts at a time of some fun stuff that we're working on. And then we're going to have, you know, there's, you can listen to the podcast from there. There's going to be show notes on there. There's going to be, yeah, there you go. And then we're also doing a thing with events. So if anybody wants to shoot us a note, truckshowpodcast@gmail.com, with any events that you have coming up, we've got an events tab, and we're basically adding for free anybody who has any events, so that when people are searching and they're, you know, what's going on this weekend, they can see if there's something near them. So we've had a bunch of listeners just say, oh, this event coming on for my club, whatever. So if you guys have something, this event page is going to be a place where all truck enthusiasts can come to find out lifted, lowered, everything in between. It'll be right here. And then there's links to register, where it's at, all that kind of stuff. So cool. You can see what's in your neck of the woods. So, and then this year we're going to try and launch our YouTube channel as well. So it's not going to be the full episodes or anything. We're going to do some more behind the scenes. We're working on a project truck for this year that we'll do video on. And I think what we'll probably end up doing is those who come in studio will videotape just the main interview portion, and then everything else will be audio. So it'll be like, hey, watch the 30-minute interview with so-and-so. If you want to hear the rest, downloads here. And that way it doesn't cannibalize our audio feed, because that's where most of our people hang out. So just a lot of changes with the podcast, but all good. And we're super, super excited for the future. I mean, this year looks really bright. And if I can figure out how to, you know, clone myself and make some more time in the day, I think it'll be really good.
If only. So two things on that. The first of which is, can you tell us about the project truck? Because I'm sure everybody's going to be curious if you can.
We haven't gotten it set in stone yet, but there's a certain manufacturer that's our presenting sponsor and a underserved mid-sized truck in the aftermarket. And we want to show how with bolt-ons and quality products with partners that we already have, how you can build one of those up to be a really competent weekend warrior, to be able to go and explore on the weekends with something that's still very drivable and efficient around town. So we're working on that. You can put those pieces together. So
yeah. If you happen to talk to this manufacturer, can you ask them why the steering is so heavy in this particular underserved mid-sized truck?
I can tell you why the steering is heavy, because the chief engineer likes steering feel and precision over boost. And I personally think, especially in the full-size trucks, the steering's a little bit heavy for my taste. You get used to it, but it's just the way that their particular people like to tune it. They like, you know, coming from sports cars, that real precise tune, that road feel, and they felt that too much boost masks it. But I actually kind of wouldn't mind a little more steering boost. But I've asked that question before because I feel the same way.
Okay. Yeah. No, well, glad that we're on the same page about this particular unmentioned manufacturer.
Absolutely.
Next part of this is, can you tell us about, and in, you know, correspondence with this manufacturer, the other side of things that you've started doing since the Motor Trend departure, the adventures. The name of the company is Use for Adventure.
Use for Adventure. So basically the way it's set up is Truck Famous LLC is what owns the podcast. It's a disassociated, what they call a disregarded entity. It ladders up to Use for Adventure Incorporated, which is my S Corp. So that kind of owns everything. Mm-hmm. And so everything I do gets paid into that. And that's what I'll take my paycheck from. So that's kind of, the only reason I bring that up is because people don't realize how hard it is to start a business. And it's freaking nuts. Like all the things you have to do. So trying to figure out how to do two at once and have it make sense and figure out flow of money and all that is just.
And how to insure it and
everything,
pay taxes on it. What
EIN number and resale number, business licenses, and
did you incorporate in California?
Yeah, so in California, a lot of the myth is that if you incorporate like Nevada or New Hampshire or something, that you somehow skirt the rules. The reality is that the state of California comes after you anyway. So they're like, oh, address is here. So there's not really a benefit to incorporating outside. So everything's just done through California. Yeah, I'm gonna pay the man anyway. So.
The podcast trope that everybody says is, if you're going to incorporate the podcast, do it in Delaware because you don't have to pay state tax. And it's like, but eventually you're going to have to pay the income tax on your own state. Regardless.
Yeah. I mean, even with me, like, you know, it's those entities, for those who understand taxes, it's a K-1 passed down through my personal taxes. Right. So I got to pay California anyway. So it's just, there wasn't an advantage to doing that. And, you know, it's fine. It is what it is. It's if that's the cost of doing business and, you know. It is what it is. But so
the business is good. Yeah. Tell us about the business.
So the business is a little bit of everything. So I like to tell people that it's marketing, consulting, freelance, and adventure. So on the marketing side, I've got a few clients who've already reached out. I'm helping them with go-to-market strategy, product planning, things like that. So people who have, products that need to go to market, or they don't know how, or they've got a widget. Maybe it's somebody who owns a shop and they're like, hey, I've got this great idea. I don't know how to make it a product and incorporate my business, helping them with that. The consulting side of it is doing some stuff for OEs and other companies talking about things like, strategies, where the companies are going, what the perception is, things like that, putting people together, helping to plan and strategize, which I really enjoy. I just partnered with Quinn over at 74 Weld, who a lot of you may know is making some really sick portal axles. And I can't tell you what we're doing, but I can tell you that we've partnered with 74 Weld and GFC to debut a really freaking cool vehicle at Expo West in the GFC booth. And I will leave it at that. It'll be unlike anything anybody's ever seen before. And Quinn hired me to kind of usher that project through. So that's in, that world. And then freelance, writing for a couple friends of mine who have companies or third-party magazines, things like that, who might need some content help. And then the adventure side of it is I've got a bunch of people who've reached out and asked if I could do Overland Adventure, what we did at Four Wheeler, for their customer, for their client, appreciation run, something like that. Guided Nissan was actually my very first client. We did the Mojave Road in Frontiers with 12 journalists, and I guided, narrated it, spotted, all that, gave all the history during the trip. Mm-hmm. And That trip was wild because it was in the middle of these California rains, and we just skirted rain the entire time. We had one night of a heavy downpour, and there was a time when we got to the western edge where there was like hail and a deluge at Baker, which is just off the 15 freeway, and it was completely like we were driving in washes to get to where we needed to go, and the washes were starting to fill up. It's like, all right, we got to go. But the Frontiers did awesome. None of them
stock got trucks.
Stock trucks,
totally stock.
Yeah, none of them got stuck or anything. No flat tires. I mean, just super, super fun. I love the Frontier because, you know, for the price, you get a really, really great, solid, reliable, durable pickup truck. It doesn't have all the crazy bells and whistles like, oh, it's got this, you know, this mode for driving in sand or this mode for rock climbing. I actually don't like that. I like to just drive, and the Nissan allows you to do that.
Turn the shit off and go.
Yeah, it's just it's a good platform, and you know, there's still rear disc brakes and fully boxed frame rails, and like other competition currently.
Who could you possibly be talking about? Not a company that's hopefully undoing all of that shit.
Yeah, soon.
That's coming out soon.
I know you guys are excited, but yeah, God. So it was a great trip.
Fucking drugs.
And I think a lot of people who hadn't experienced them in that environment before were pretty impressed with the capability of the truck. And you don't need a super expensive truck to go adventuring. I mean, the Pro 4X is what, you know, low 40s, something like that. And it comes with a rear locker and Bilsteins and full skid plating tow hooks, you know, spray and bed liner, a really nice, you know, Fender audio system, big screen, comfortable seats, all that stuff. Yep. And I think people are like, wow, this, you know, this is like just an honest pickup truck. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there with too many gadgets and gizmos, and the Frontier is just your solid working pickup that has just enough tech and comfort for, you know, to be on par with stuff today, but it doesn't have any of the really, you know, crazy stuff that you don't need.
Mm-hmm. And it's got a hell of an engine for that class too.
Yeah, 3.8 liter, yeah, 310 horse, and it's the same 9-speed that's out of the Titan. So, you know, the 9-speed should be totally overbuilt. It's fantastic, super, super fuel efficient. I mean, you know, mid-20s on the highway, and that 9-speed allows for really low first gear. So it crawls pretty nicely. And it's got a good brake traction control system on it. So if you're not into the locker, you can get up to a lot of places with the brake traction control system. Mm-hmm. And it just works well. It's just a nice, like I said, it's nice on a pickup truck. And it's something that, you know, I'm looking forward to potentially doing a little bit, you know, more with it.
Yep. I honestly really like the Frontier. I put, oh God, Chris, what did we say? It was like 775 miles on one.
Something like that. Yeah, it was a lot.
I only averaged like 21, but in all fairness, I was towing 3,000 pounds for part of it. And,
oh yeah.
You know,
well, the other thing is
running, I can't like high highway speeds.
Yeah.
But
It's all day long, 75, 80 miles an hour. It's so quiet and comfortable. I would venture to say it's as quiet as a Nissan Titan XD Platinum Reserve, which has the laminated glass and all that. That's the one thing that everybody says is just how quiet the Frontier is. It's just a really nice truck to drive across country.
Is the backup camera resolution still like 90s?
Yeah, you can definitely have better backup resolution. There's a few vehicles out there. Some of the Jeeps are like that, where it's like, you know, guys, come on, you know, you put a little nicer camera back here. But
yep, speaking of Jeeps, did you pre-run this route in the 392 or
I know the route really well, but with all the winter storms I was worried about what it was going to be like, so I pre-ran it in my Wrangler 392 and then did the whole trip in a Frontier.
Okay, so you want to tell us about the 392, because I think the last time you were on the show we discussed it was coming, but we had a conversation about the famous near flop with the blue one.
You haven't done that on my new one,
that's good. So anyway, so you took delivery of a red one, and
so I've got a firecracker red one. It's awesome. It's all AV on it. It's a JL370 package. Really, the only thing that was shocking is just how terrible the fuel economy is on it. I'm not bitching about it because I knew what I was getting myself into. It's just that the range off road sucks.
Is it the same fuel tank size as the 3.6?
Yeah, 21.5.
Okay.
So I wish I had about 4 more gallons on board, but with the AV fuel caddy, it's fine. It's also starting to break in now. So this last trip when I went to Moab and back in, it actually averaged over 15 miles per gallon. And my hand calculated was 15.9.
That's so, actually, I mean, for the power, that's not that bad.
So if there's no wind on the highway, it's fine. It just lopes along at like 1800 RPM and you go up a hill and you're climbing some grade and it downshifts to seventh gear from eighth. It's like, you barely notice it. And you're like, oh, it just doesn't care. And the nice thing is like my old Jeep was a supercharged 3.6 with a stick. And I mean, you're just rowing the gears all the time. There's times you're in third gear just to stay at 70. This thing just doesn't even care. It's amazing. If there's anything that I do that I, the note, let's see the difference between this and my other one. It definitely feels heavier and more substantial. There's definitely a lot more weight over the nose. So we're, shocks are going to be really important. I wouldn't do anything off the shelf. I'd make sure that whatever suspension somebody did do it was unique to the 392. Mm-hmm. It's got a little bit different with the AAV lift, because of the rear suspension and the mounts are a little bit different on the 392. The roll center is a little bit higher on the AAV 392 versus the AAV regular Jeep. So handling's not quite as flat as my old one, but other than that, it rides phenomenal. This has got to be one of the best riding Jeeps I've ever been in. And it tackles everything. I mean, sand is so much fun, not just because you can stomp on it and throw roots, but because if you get, you can dig yourself down to the axles and you just floor it and it just pops right back. It just doesn't care.
Oh,
it,
man.
We had a van on in the motor get stuck in the wash, and it was a long wheelbase Sprinter high roof. And I towed it like 200 feet out of the wash with the 392, and it just didn't even care. It was just like,
boom. It's hysterical.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, you know, I don't like the way Jeep has a 2-battery system. So anyone listening who's got a Wrangler gets the little battery goes bad. There's no way to know it's going to go bad. It just doesn't start and it causes some problems, and they only last about 2 years.
Where does it live?
Yeah, it's there. So there's the main starting battery that's in the normal spot. And then underneath in the fender liner, behind the fender liner in the passenger area by the firewalls, little battery.
Okay, and they're not it's like Volvo on some Volvos. It's behind the headlight, between the headlight and the fender. You know, the second battery is under the passenger seat. It's like headaches on headaches. So yeah, I know what you're getting at though with the second battery.
They don't last, and there's no way to know they went bad. They just go bad. And it's you know, you always hope that it's not going to go bad when you're on a trip. Well, the nice thing about the 392. No ESS, no second battery. You look, as much as I miss the stick, I having a stick, it crawled way better than this thing crawls. Although this has the select speed control, which is like trail crawl control or whatever on Toyota. You use the paddle shifters to set your speed, and it's really good. So you're not on the brakes as much and things like that. But the manual had 101-to-1 crawl ratio. I mean, it was stupid how easy this thing. I'm still getting used. This is the first automatic transmission I've ever bought new. So I'm still getting used to wheeling it.
What's the crawl ratio on the 392?
Oh, you had to ask.
I don't know why I had to ask. I had to Google.
It's probably 60.
62.5-to-1. So.
Yeah, it's a little deeper with AV, with the 37s and stuff on it. So, but yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's definitely, I mean, it still crawls. It crawls up things great. The torque converter could lock up a little bit sooner for me. But the one thing I like about it is, from a reliability standpoint, it has no supercharger. It has no turbo. It's just a big, stupid, big-ass V8, pushrod V8. You can't get more simple than that. They've been building 6.4-liter 8-speeds for like 15 years. So they haven't figured out by now.
What was the first year of the 6.4 and the Challengers was like 2012.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's basically the same engine, I think, with a different cam, different oil pan, some stuff like that, but basically the same thing. It's nice because I don't really worry about something going wrong on it.
Yeah,
it's
simplicity is best.
Yeah, so for me I go out and I'll do a 400-mile trip. Reliability is huge for me, and I think the 392 is gonna do that. And with my 10 gallons of extra fuel, it's great. I learned that Off-Road Plus is fantastic. It's a great button for romping on things and all that. Oh yeah, I'll talk about my tips here in a second. It wants to hold the gear for a long time. So what I hated about it was, an Off-Road Plus low range, it doesn't want to shift out of first. Like you got to rev it to like 4 grand before it shifts.
Oh, that's annoying.
And so I ended up getting like 4 miles to the gallon, 4.5 or something like that, crawling in Arizona through like a 30-mile section. And I ended up getting my low fuel light at like 69 miles. And so I've since learned that when I'm in low range, either manually shift it myself or don't go into off-road plus, and it'll pop up to about 7 or 8 miles per gallon. And yeah, I mean, I really wheeled it.
That's a huge difference.
You know, we're taking it places, and it's great on the trail. It's just like a Wrangler, but more, which is cool. But it'll do about eight to nine miles per deserty, kind of faster stuff. And then the crawly stuff, it's like, you know, 6 or 7. So you just have to account for that. And there you go. That was I had about 2 gallons left, and I had to fill up on the trail because we're still about 20 miles. I'm like, I'm probably going to make it, but we're all stopped anyway.
You never want to be the guy that runs
out of gas. I killed. No, you don't. And I didn't fill up my tank because we were only going about 80 miles. And so I'm like, there's no way I'm not going to go 80 miles in my Jeep. And then it was like, I should probably use that fuel tank that's strapped onto the back. So, you know, we all learn, you know, learning lesson there. And then, Moab, I crushed all four of my tips. On the first day, I crushed the two right ones. And then on the next day, I crushed the other one. So I called my buddy Mike Rice at Adventure Off-Road here in Huntington Beach. I said, hey, dude, I need you to get me price and availability for tips. And he goes, how many? I said, all four. He goes, yeah, have a drink and call me back. The cost of the dealer was around $600 for four tips.
What?
Yeah. And they're designed to be replaced, and they're going to gouge you for that. So
super. Oh, my God.
With Jeep and their, you know, $600 for replacing your
Christ.
Tip. Well, Rich Waitis at Magnaflow had offered a while back to do an exhaust. I went, I'm going to keep stock for a while. Let me see. So I, at the Moab vendor row, I sheepishly walked up to him with my head hanging down. He goes, yeah, I saw your post. I know why you're.
Is it the Magnaflow like Overlander system where it relocates the tips up and moves the muffler higher and out?
So they've got their rock system that has the tailpipes high, but you lose the button. And I use the button all the time because this thing is obnoxious. When I brought it home from driving home from Michigan, I parked it in the garage. And the next morning, I started it up and it rattled all the pictures on the wall downstairs. And my wife texted me, she was obnoxious. So I used the quiet, what I call the happy neighbor button. And I didn't want to lose that. But on the Magnaflow system, it's got five mufflers. There's two Heimholds, two inline mufflers, and the one in the back. And what's nice about it is it cancels out the drone. The stock exhaust, as amazing as it is for stock exhaust, has a few holes where you can catch drone and it's a little bit annoying, especially when you're in the four-cylinder mode and you can hear that tone. Magnaflow canceled a lot of that out. And then their tips are closer to the center and then higher. So they should be better than the Jeep tips in as far as departure angle goes. Mm-hmm. It should be I'm guessing it'll be 15 or 20% louder in the loud side of it, but without the resonance frequency on the, you know, on the highway and four-cylinder mode. So I think it's going to be overall a good mod. I was trying to avoid it, but I'll also tell you, when I got it, 470 horsepower felt absolutely ridiculous. Now that I'm used to it, it's just like, it could be 550, I'd be fine, right? It's like, I could be a little louder here, I'd be fine. The best part is, it's ridiculous. I mean, the thing just sounds ridiculous. I had two dudes pull up next to me, it was a Mustang and Camaro, like revving on each other. So I'm like, I want to be in this fight. So I slide in, I hit my bumper or my button. It's like, rah, 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 rah. And these dudes are looking around like, what's making all that noise?
Yep.
Light scream. I totally keep up with them. They're like both looking over at me like, well, what's this dude doing? Yep. And then I boned out of it, proved my point. I hit the button and I go back to quiet mode. And it's like, they're making all sorts of noise down the street. And here's the stupid slow Jeep. Don't mind me.
Right. Who's getting pulled over out of that group.
Oh, for sure. I'm like, no, not me, officer. Maybe red, but it's slow. So,
right.
It's pretty rad. There are times where I'll hit the button and it's fun to watch people start looking around for what's making that sound. And I've told the story in our podcast, but I'm embarrassed to admit it. I was driving home from Michigan. I'm somewhere in middle America and I'm thinking, you know what? I'm going to grab myself some Cracker Barrel while I'm out here because it's Cracker Barrel on the road. And I go and have my Cracker Barrel and I go to walk outside. I'm not looking, I'm just fumbling with my keys in my pocket. I hit the remote start. And I look up, and at the exact moment my Jeep is starting, there's a lady, like a senior citizen lady, walking behind it. It looked like somebody shot her from a sniper rifle at 1,000 yards. And I did everything I could to grab my keys to try and shut it off. Yeah. I'm like, I'm sorry. So, like, the ridiculous amount of power you wield with an exhaust like this is.
Oh, man. I had a moment like that when I had the Escalade V for a week. I remote started it, not knowing my wife was going to walk around the side of the car with our, I think at that point, 6-month-old daughter. I was like, no. But if you push on lock before this, anyways.
Yeah. Slow it down.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny thing is the exhaust tips, right? So they're normally pointed down. And apparently with them pointed up, the condensation doesn't leave as easily. So now when I do exhaust start, it shoots water out of it if it's been sitting for a little while, which is super hilarious.
Nice. Are the tips replaceable on the MagnaFlow one?
Not on the MagnaFlow one. So we're going to pray to God that those suckers are, high and tight, closer together, like the picture shows. And it's funny because everybody's like, well, you can get an exhaust skid. I refuse to get a freaking exhaust skid. I will not get an exhaust skid. They're so ugly. It's so stupid. Like, I'd rather just go buy a new muffler from MagnaFlow or have some new tips welded on than go pay for an extra hunk of metal that's going to, hang off the back. The reality is on this build, I've learned a lot about building JLs. And even though I have more power than I've ever had, I'm really trying to keep my range up and get back to lightweighting. I honestly feel like the next trend in off-roading, especially for overlanding, is lighter stuff and not bringing everything, right? Because most people are camping for 4 or 5 days in the same spot. Most people are overlanding, they're camping one night. And to pack up all the crap and realize what you need and you don't need, you could probably, I would challenge every person listening to this podcast, you could probably get 20% lighter by just going through your stuff and Xing out stuff you don't need.
100%. And I mean, the day-to-day aspect of that is one thing, but you take it off road and, lighter means less wear on tires and brakes and, driveline components and suspension, and it's, I go through my truck every once in a while for a trip and I'm like, how did this even get in here? It's like,
or I've been looking for this. Why would I have put it here or whatever? But it's
for that.
To the point now where, I usually carry extra stuff anyway because I lead a lot of them. So I always have a full tool bag. I always have a full recovery bag. I always have a full first aid kit with me. So those things are always going to be with me. So I'm already right there 50 pounds heavier than probably most people who are out with me. And I'm just trying to really, I love GFC. I love my rooftop tent, but I've just been shift potting it so far because I can't find a Wrangler rack that I'm super satisfied with. And as much as I loved having rooftop tent, the shift pod, being insulated and dark and everything, it's really great for sleeping. Mm-hmm. So far, so good. I'm probably just going to keep running the shift pod mini because it's been great so far.
Yeah. Speaking of weight, you're running 37-inch KM3s.
Yep.
How are they working out?
Great. I had KO2s on the old Jeep and never had a problem. But I was starting to, it's funny, when I got the old Jeep, I'm like, I'm nowhere near going to jump in and do stuff as deep as I did on the, on my old JK. And then the JL is so capable, I started doing more and I was like, well, I'll get KM3s. So the KM3s, I haven't had one flat in 100,000 miles on those tires between two or three vehicles, maybe four. Mm-hmm. I've had great luck with them. They've got nice road manners. They're not very loud. And they're just phenomenal in the sand or, just about anywhere else. Out in the Mojave Desert, where I spent a lot of my time exploring, they've been great. And so I decided when we did this AEV build, I had my choice between the KO2s and the KM3s. And I'm like, let's just do KM3 because that extra rubber on the sidewall, resists. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things like cactus and stuff like that. That's pretty sharp out there. Yeah. You never know. Going through mines, there's always, old concrete you miss or foundation or a rusty bolt, and the KM3s just have that much extra, puncture resistance. And they've proven to be a great tire for the desert Southwest.
They're what, 37 by 12 and a half?
Yeah, roughly? 37, 1250 on 17s.
Okay. Any idea how much they weigh just for
I don't know. I'm sure we probably figured it out on the BFG website.
If my internet was faster, I would have had an answer already. It's not. So. Yeah, tire weight is one thing that people completely forget about. You see guys running like RTs, the cross terrains, or, you know, or a mud terrain on the street on a Tacoma, or, you know.
Well, and then some of those vehicles are really susceptible to that sort of thing, especially the V6s and the trucks. You know, I feel like with the V8, it kind of doesn't really care. There's so much reserve power. Let's see here. So these are, I think mine are load range Ds.
That was another question.
Yeah.
Because of the weight of the 392, the truck's probably what, like 5,200 pounds?
Yeah, somewhere in there. 50, so, I'd say probably 53, 54. It's got, okay. The nice thing about the 392 is I got an XR, so it's already, it's already re-geared from the factory. So 456s, which I think that on the XR, Jeep actually geared it short on purpose, knowing a lot of people would put 37s on it, because 456s and 37s on the Jeep are absolutely perfect. Like,
if you're right, if you can get into eighth gear and stay in eighth gear on the highway, then you're
it cruises in eighth gear no problem. I mean, on the way to Moab, I was in eighth gear for 90% of the time, and once you get to Utah where the speeds are 75 or 80, it cruises all day and it just doesn't care, you know. It motors. So 456s are great, and then I like the little fender lip extensions. I think those are cool.
Yeah, so BFG's website says 77.5 a tire.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, so that's pretty good and meaty, but, you know, it's weight to keep the corners down when you're, you know, in.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about a solid axle is you've got all that weight hanging down below, so it kind of keeps you from flopping and doing stupid stuff. I mean, I don't want to pick on the Bronco guys, because I think the Bronco is a really great first swing by Ford. I think there's a lot to love about it. But I didn't post it yet, but I've got a picture of my Jeep next to a Raptor, a Bronco Raptor, and it's at least a tire width wider than my Jeep. Like, it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be the only Bronco that I'd want. And the reality is, the trails and stuff I do, there's places where it 100% absolutely would not fit.
So wide.
And you're looking at a lot of these guys on the same obstacle, and you'll look at a Wrangler and the body's super straight, and it drops in and does this thing. You look at a Bronco and it's like, oh, front tire. Oh, the other front tire. Oh, rear tire.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, it's like, I think because it's a convertible, because of what it does, you know, convertible hardtop, because of what it does, I think people naturally want to say it's a Wrangler competitor, where I really feel like it's more akin to a 4Runner. You know, it's kind of a mix between a 4Runner and a Wrangler in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Sizes and stuff. But
yep.
There's a lot of people who don't know how to wheel IFS, and it's a completely different thing, especially when have a lot of droop in the front. So as much as I like the package, and then you look at the Raptor is for the Broncos, like 1,000 or 1,100 pounds more than a standard Bronco. And even with the 400 plus horse 3-liter V6, it's still 0-60 is like 7 seconds. 0-60 on mine was 4.5. I mean, it's just the drivability of getting on a freeway or passing somebody, or, you know, just cruising along and somebody wants to cut you off, so you close up the hole. Like, not only does it frighten people because it's so explosive, it'll go from quiet mode. You don't have to push the button. If you go wide open throttle, it just opens the valves. Yep. The amount of speed that it can do at highway when you stomp on it, and how violent the bark that comes out when you romp on the throttle it literally startles people. Like, I've watched cars go like that, you know, and it's I don't know, you drive a slow vehicle and you know, I'm partial. I love Land Cruiser 80s and, you know, I've driven slow Jeeps forever. To have something that has that kind of power, you drive completely. I had a TRX for a year. And that thing, people just leave you alone. And with the 392, nobody knows it's a 392. And then once you kind of like scare them, they go, oh yeah, I'm going to leave that guy alone. And it's just, you know, you can drive a lot more offensively than defensively because you've got the power to do it.
Right. You're aggressively defensive.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. The untrained eye doesn't know what it is. Versus the untrained eye sees a Bronco Raptor with those huge flares and is like,
Rubbermaid flares?
Yeah. What's that?
The Rubbermaid flares?
The rubber, yeah. The 55-gallon garbage can top flares.
It's not my favorite part of that. I was not impressed. And then all the kind of boy racer, the vent insert on it and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of silly and cartoony. Whereas, I don't know, there's the interior and the Wrangler better. And there's just something about the Wrangler. It's still classic. It's not trying to be anything it isn't. Like, it's an unbroken chain from 1941 of every evolution. There's never not been a Jeep, you know, in that body style. Whereas, you know, Ford's trying to reinvent it by putting on a Ranger chassis, IFS, changing the proportions of it a little bit. You know, one of the classic things about a Jeep, why it has such a long nose, is because the front axle is moved out because it has to be ahead of the oil pan in order to clear and let it articulate. So there's a certain natural look to a Wrangler with that two-box design and that long nose with the wheels pushed way forward. Of course, it's for approach angle as well. But that's really hard to replicate in anything else. You know, the Bronco's got kind of a squattier nose on it. It doesn't have to worry about it because the IFS can be right under the engine. And you lose some of those classic proportions a little bit, I think. Mm-hmm. And there's just something when I see them together, like I like the Bronco two-door. I think that's the more pure of the two. The four-door is really messy around the B and C pillar and then where the upkick is on the door. Like, I think they could have cleaned that up some. And
where the roof has to do the job the roof is supposed to do.
Yeah, and the roof wraps down. And the reason the roof wraps down is because they had to put their side curtain airbags in there. Mm-hmm. And so they were sort of locked into where the glass was. And so I think there's some proportions on it that aren't as clean as they can be, where the Wrangler is what it is, and it doesn't apologize for it either. And it's not trying to be something it isn't. And some people don't like them, and that's fine because it's not the right vehicle for a lot of people. Like, there are some compromises, but it's the amount of capability, and then now with the V8, just it's silly. But there's never a time that you aren't smiling when you drive that thing. Like, it's just fun all the time.
Curious to hear your thoughts on the topic of Bronco versus Wrangler, and also just the lineage of Wrangler. So Jeep just launched the 2024 and gets side curtain airbags for the first time ever. Yep. And I mean, the other, you know, big highlights are a stubbier grill. 7-slot grill is stubbier. And the big infotainment screen. Those are the huge highlights visually. And then, you know, beefier axles,
waterproof, drivers or
yeah, power seat, and a locker for the willies. And what else?
I think that evolutionary design, they asked for more on it than what I think they got. Some people say the grill looks like a Renegade. I think it depends on what it is. I actually really like the grill. And if you look on a 392, that's a Sahara there. So that's more of like, you know, I want to be a G-Wagon.
That's a 4xe Sahara. So definitely I want to be a
definitely the bougie, around town car. Yeah. But if you look at it on a 392 or 4xe Rubicon, I think it looks great. I kind of like it. You know, I'm halfway tempted to throw one on mine, mostly because there's additional airflow in it. And so
it is functional.
Yeah, with the AV bumper and stuff, the additional airflow is not going to hurt me by having that. So, you know, I'm halfway thinking about that. The full float rear is pretty interesting. So it's still a 44, but if you look at it, there you go. If you look at it,
it sounds great.
You had a 3,500 pound tow rating. Everybody's like, well, dude, it could tow way more than that. And lots of people did tow way more than that. Mm-hmm. The problem was the gross axle weight rating wasn't high enough to get more than a 3,500 pound tow rating. So by moving to a full float 44 in the back, they were able to get that gross axle weight rating up. And that's why I can tow 5,000 pounds now.
That makes sense.
I think that's great, especially for the V8 guys who need to tow more because the vehicle is certainly capable of it.
And the Bronco's got a 5,000 rating for the
So it's good. Yeah, this is a perfect example where a competition is good, whether it's tech or features or functionality. Jeep had wanted to do a lot of this stuff before and basically were shot down saying, no, you know, there's no competition. You guys own the space, blah, blah, blah. When Bronco came in, the product planners were able to push some stuff through that they've been wanting to do for a while. And so it's good for competition. It's good for both sides. The new interior is phenomenal. Way higher quality than the Ford. The Ford is very creaky and everything moves on. All the grab handles move on it. The integration, I knew the screen was coming. I thought it was going to be a 10.4 or 10.5, whatever like the Grand Cherokee has. I didn't realize it was going all the way to the 12.3.
Yeah, and it stretches like a third of the dashboard.
But the way they've integrated it is really tasteful. It looks really nice. It looks really premium. And that, along with the power seats, that screen has been designed that you can get it wet and it won't have a problem. And then the other thing is it's very visible in direct sunlight. So if the top's off, so they did a lot of work to make sure that screen could be read in sunlight. And I got in that interior and I'll tell you, I was a little bit jealous. It's like, wow, you know, because I knew it was coming. And I'm like, no, I didn't know whether 392 was coming for 24 or not. It was like a 50-50. And I just didn't want to miss the opportunity. So I'm super glad that I got mine. And I still love the 23 interior. But that 24 is nice. He also did a, instead of a 2-mic array, it now has a 7-mic array. So for Bluetooth and things like that, it's a lot easier to hear somebody. There's more noise cancellation in it. They redid the... Yeah.
You'll be able to have a conversation via Bluetooth on the highway.
What? What? Are you driving your Jeep? Yeah. What did you say that? There you go. It's just really nicely done. It does
it's
have
great.
A few Bronco, Ford, Raptor-esque things like that little silver on the right-hand side of the dash. If you notice, there's one above the screen. There's also one on the left, and there's one down below. That was supposed to be a nod at the compass. Yeah, exactly. At a compass north, south, east, west. You know, I think there's some other competitors that have a similar little accent there. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, there's certain things on mine, like I run my iPad and I've got, there's no more bolt for the passenger grab handle anymore that you can put in a, you know, a ball there for a RAM mount. And so
somebody will come up with something.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just going to take a little bit of time. So I was able to outfit mine and bring a lot of products over from my 20 into the 23.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm not somebody who flips vehicles. Like I'll have this one for a long time. The only reason I got the 392 is I had the opportunity to get it. Yeah. And it's phenomenal. Like I'm glad I did it. There's nothing about my, you know, about my setup where I'm like, man, I really wish I stuck. I haven't looked back. It's amazing. Thing just works great.
Yeah. What do you think about them offering an 8,000-pound winch?
Yeah, so having a winch from the factory is cool. I mean, I don't know why they didn't do it sooner. And if you look at the way Bronco integrates a winch, like on the Everglades, the package, I think it is, it's so ugly. It's like a tray that sticks out.
It's not integrated. It's plopped there on a piece of steel up front.
And you look at the Wrangler's completely integrated into the front bumper, and it looks good and obviously worn. It works. It's a great winch. I mean, they've done a lot of things that are right, that are just incremental upgrades, but they're going to, that's really going to make it a more pleasurable vehicle for a lot of people. I think they even have a premium sound deadening package to make it a little bit quieter in it now too. And yeah, I mean, that looks so ugly to me.
That looks like the movable winches that you can
and put it on the rear hitch or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
The other thing is, if you've seen how Bronco mounts the license plate, they mounted exactly where that worn winch is. It's on it looks horrible. So I don't know where in a plate, in somewhere that requires a front plate, how you would run it with that. Where on the Jeep, it's no problem.
Yep. I'm still trying to figure out a front plate mount for my bumper and winch situation. So no, I want to pick your brain about the 8,000-pound part of the winch, because you know, Warren sent me my winch to, you know, test and review and everything. And Andy and I went back and forth and we decided on a 12,000-pound winch because the Lexus is like 5,600-pound stock plus all the crap. And, you know, 1.5 is the general rule.
Rule of thumb is 1.5. So if you figure a non-392 is right around 5,100 pounds, you know, maybe 50, something like that. So if you do the calculation of 5,200 pounds times 1.5, it's 7,800 pounds. So technically... Right. You're right within there. I was going to send me a 12 on mine, but it was back ordered when AV built it. So we ended up just doing a Xeon 10S, which is fine. I've never had to a problem with a 10 on a Wrangler. A 12 is just that much extra overhead that you have. The 8 will be fine for most people. Most people will probably never even pull the winch cable. But,
No. Most people won't know how to properly...
No,
use it, let alone, you know, so the GVWR on the 392 is 6,100.
I think
at least that's what Google told me.
Yeah, I think it's 6,250 on the XR. So on a standard versus an XR, because XR comes with 35s, it gets a little bit of a bump up in gross vehicle weight rating. So I think it's the same or within 50 pounds of the diesel.
Okay. Oh, rest in peace. That man.
Yeah, well, you can still get in Gladiator for another year.
And you think they're going to throw the 392 in the Gladiator?
No, it'll never happen. That was never part of the plan. I've had people asking me for years about that. Huh. The way 392 came to be is Tim Kaniskis, who was the executive at Dodge, who was Mr. Hellcat everything. He had a brief stint at Jeep for a year or so, and this was his baby. And he made it happen. And then when Jim Morrison came back to Jeep and took over and Kaniskis went back to Dodge, this was already fully baked, but they were on to the new strategy of electrification and 4xe. So it was never planned for the Gladiator. Basically, that ship has sailed.
And so Gladiator 4xe.
Yeah, and I would not hold my breath for the Hurricane six cylinder. The joke is it already has a Hurricane. It's just, you know, a four cylinder Hurricane. I would not.
Oh, I forgot that it's called Hurricane.
Yeah, it's the same family. So basically, one of the wagon, you're two more cylinders off the same basic design, the architecture of that family. But the problem is to do the cooling stack for the turbos, the intercooler and everything, you would have to add several inches to the engine bay. And I think it would be too much work and really throw the proportions of Wrangler off. So I don't know if, you know, my guess is 20 come 25, 4xe probably becomes the top dog. But who knows? I will tell you, I've got a 4xe Grand Cherokee. My wife, that's her car. She absolutely loves it. It's been fantastic. And then I had our four-wheeler 4xe Wrangler for about 3 or 4 months and did a bunch of wheeling with it. And other than being really heavy and having a smaller gas tank, which I found out heading out to the desert to one of my favorite spots and realizing, oh, crap. Why is my fuel light on? Well, Jeep allows you to do something that nobody else allows you to do. And they've got three buttons for the hybrid system. So it's battery, hybrid, and e-save. And so what hybrid is basically the basic mode it starts up with where it prioritizes battery and then just acts like a typical non-plug-in hybrid.
Yep.
Once the battery charge is gone, then you have battery only. So like if you're trying to sneak in like a Panther to your neighborhood late at night after drinking and smoking with the boys, you just hit that and you roll into the driveway. No real world use for that at all. And then the e-save is my favorite. And like I tell my wife when she's driving on the freeway, EVs have no efficiency at highway speeds. All the EV efficiency comes from around town. That's where it makes the most sense. So I'm like, when you get on the highway, just hit e-save and let the, you know, your steady state on the freeway, you're basically charging the batteries at that point and not using them unless you, you know, jump into higher, you know, wide open throttle to pass somebody. So what I did in the 4xe is I'd go out to the desert, I would keep it in e-save, and I ran out of gas. I was, you know, the whole thing was like, you know, it was very unhappy. You're running out. I had like less than 2 miles left or something like that. Excuse me. So what I was able to do is as I was coming up to the 10 miles short of the off ramp where I need to fill up, I was able to switch over to battery mode. And at highway speeds, I had a full battery and I basically used it as an auxiliary fuel tank to roll into gas, which is pretty phenomenal. And then off road, 4xe is really fun. And it's, I will tell you, after driving the Rivian cross country, driving a few other electric four-wheel drives, and then taking the 4xe in battery mode, it's interesting. You'll run up on animals and they don't care about you. And I don't know if it's because, I mean, we may have talked about this on the last podcast I was on, but it's almost like the sound of the engine scares them, but the sound of the tires crushing gravel just sounds like hooves. And so they just see another animal. And my daughter and I are out driving, free running this trail for an event we were doing for four-wheeler in the 4xe. And we're pulling up on coyotes and there's, you know, owls and there's like, you know, some sheep over here. And it's just like, they just look at you and you're just like, yeah, whatever. So there's definitely some benefits to it. And it's pretty interesting. So I'm not an EV homer at all. I don't like being pushed into it, but there is a place where some of that technology is pretty cool for off-roading. And it just depends. I think I like the hybrid. I think the hybrids is a much better, more natural place to go next than full BEV for a gazillion reasons. Yeah. And the experience we've had with our 4xe has been fantastic. We've got 7,500 miles on it. We haven't had one issue with it.
It's
great.
Yeah, especially, yeah, plug-in hybrids especially are the, I mean, the most sensible next step, especially for, I think, the Jeep brand, because people tend to, you know, hold on to the past a little in buying Wranglers and whatnot.
Sure. We're traditionalists. We don't want somebody dictating, you know, how to use our vehicle and stuff. And I'll tell you, look at, you know, was it a Lightning has like 178 kilowatt hour battery pack or something, whereas a 4xe Grand Cherokee has a 17 kilowatt hour. Think of how many hybrids that you could make battery packs out of with all that, you know, rare earth minerals and all that other stuff that you'd have to do for a full BEV. And you still have the best of both worlds. You still have, we could still take that car to Colorado tomorrow and we would, it would be great. And we still, you know, if you're on highway with no battery, you still get regen braking. So from a maintenance standpoint is you're not as hard on your brakes because it's going in back into the battery and it's a heavy car. And I like having something with mass. If they were to get into an accident or something like that, like it's a pretty heavy car. So I think there's a lot of benefit to the hybrids. And so far my experience of owning one has been great. My experience of wheeling the 4xe has been great. And I like to tease people and tell them that I'm carbon neutral because I've got a hybrid in my driveway sharing with the 392.
So. Yeah, the antithesis of the 392 is the hybrid and EV.
Listen, mode. I'm doing my part, okay? I'm a V8 hybrid. I've got that over there, so.
I do think that that once the 392 meets its demise, the sweet spot in the Wrangler lineup, you know, now that it's got side curtain airbags and all that stuff, is going to be a Rubicon 392. You know, it does everything that a Rubicon should do. And you can plug it around the city on, you know, battery mode. And
4xe. 4xe. Yeah. You said 392 again.
Shit. Yeah. Jesus.
You're right. The 392 is awesome. I highly recommend it.
You're not plugging the 392 into any charge outlets anytime soon, though. Not unless except the tender, you know.
Unless he's just trying to bend his exhaust tips back with the charger. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, right.
Man. I got a
big enough. I wrapped the charging cable around him and I just yanked and some work. Yeah.
I got a
port in there and wheel.
Dave, yeah. The Sawzall and my mud flaps and the rearmost resonator on my truck coming up. So,
oh yeah, you're gonna have some fun.
Yeah. So what else is going on in your world? Driving anything interesting lately?
I haven't had a chance to really get behind the wheel of much stuff just because I was in this transitional period, but working on OVR magazine. That's going to help me get into back into the groove of driving new vehicles. I've got a few drive programs coming up and stuff like that. So just the beginning of the year was just super transitional, and now trying to, you know, basically just get my feet back under me. So now I got the two companies. I know you guys are familiar, so I've got one here. This is the very second issue of OVR magazine. So
nice.
OVR stands for Outdoor Vehicle Recreation. So it's anything that involves wheels and adventuring. It's great. So a little background on that is the guys who formed that is the same crew who launched Recoil magazine. So for all of you guys
that
love Recoil, that was a Motor Trend property for a number of years.
Yep.
And so when Recoil got sold, Mark Hahn, who started Recoil along with Howard Lim, they moved on with, you know, the company, and Mark Hahn was there 14 years running Recoil. Well, it got sold again and Mark Hahn left, and he's been working on OVR for years now. And we launched in January. He came, he's been asking me for three years now, 2.5 years to come join the team over there. And I'm like, I love your idea. I think it's awesome, but I really like a steady paycheck. So I can't do it right now. And so when he found out that I was leaving Four Wheeler, he called me. He's like, "You ready to talk yet?" And I was like, "All right." I told him, "Listen, you know, I don't want to run a magazine. I don't want to. I don't want a full time job there. I've got other stuff and other interests I'm pursuing. And honestly, I want to have a piece of the action. You know, so I invested some money in it, and I'm a minority owner. And my title is editor at large. And we launched in January. The first issue." We were at half the Barnes & Nobles in the U.S. The issue outperformed all expectations. So we're in all 440 Barnes & Nobles. We're in some grocery stores now. We're in all Books A Million. And we're working on some other partnerships with like Cabela's and Bass Pro Shops to get into there. It's interesting as, you know, we're all print guys. None of us think print is dead. This is a, you know, you can't tell, but like that's the cover. Shot. Super matte, right? Like you could light matches on that sucker. It's 106 or 126 pages. Wow. So a lot of content. A big, thick, heavy magazine. It's something you can put on your coffee table. It's $10 an issue, 6 times a year. So our subscriptions are $60. You can go to ovrmag.com. Digital subscriptions are $19.99, but our print is outselling digital 4-to-1.
Oh, and wow.
Awesome.
Dude, yeah, people still like holding a magazine. Like I still get friggin' Overland Journal because it feels nice to hold. Well,
speaking of OJ, like I think we all love OJ, but you know, Overland Journal is something that's a little bit more aspirational. It's a little bit more expensive. We're kind of overlaying where Four Wheeler used to be. I'd like to say we're a little bit in the middle between Tread and Overland Journal, not as targeted or niche as Crawl. And we're going to go a little bit broader than Four Wheeler. We got a lot of lifestyle, a lot of gear. We're going to do a lot of stories of destinations and doing versus kind of what we got stuck with at the end of my old role, where there's a lot of SEO and things like that. We're really trying to give back. This magazine is truly a love letter to the enthusiast who love print. And we think that we're in a different spot of the world than Overland Journal. I think we complement mm-hmm. each other. I don't think that we necessarily overlap. And it's really exciting to see how many people, I think print's been mismanaged. I don't think print is dead. And I think we're proving it with this. And it's also a completely different business model than anything that's been out there before. It's not, you know, we're not, for example, the number of ads in the magazine doesn't dictate the package size. So if you have mm-hmm. less ads, you have less stories. It's not like that at all. So we're able to commit to a large package size. We're able to commit to a really high quality magazine. It's owned by five guys that are all partners who love the space. I'm super excited about it. I think it's going to be kind of the next big thing in off-road. And I'm hoping that it really takes the place of four-wheeler, because I think when four-wheeler was canceled, a void or, you know, a vacuum mm-hmm. was really left behind in its wake. 60 years. I mean, it was the very first off-road magazine. Yep. So it's kind of funny to go from the oldest off-road magazine to the newest off-road magazine. But the team we have in place and the people that we have, we get it. Again, this is a passion play for all of us. Mm-hmm. We love the space, and we're going to be making some noise in it. So at OVR Mag on Instagram or OVRMag.com, check it out. There's not another magazine out there that's quite like this one. And I think it'll do some really special things for the industry.
You got some of our buddies signed up to Red for you too. Andy and Mercedes are on. And
yep. Yeah, we've got a lot of great contributors that you've heard from other places. Chris Collard, the Lilienthals, Ryan Kennelly. There's a bunch of names that you've heard before in the industry that you know. They're all people that are entrenched in what we do. So they're helping us get this thing launched. And again, this is the same crew that launched Recoil Magazine. So if you're used to the layout and the quality of Recoil, and you really appreciated that as a print magazine, you now have that same option in the off-road world for a new print product.
Yeah, the mantra for magazines, from my understanding now going forward, at least for the enthusiast world, is quality, not quantity.
Yep.
And that's
6 times a year. So it's bi-monthly, and it's, you know, we're going after the quality. And it doesn't seem like people have any issue paying $60 for something that gives them, in their opinion, value that they can leave out. I can't tell you mm-hmm. how many shops I've had reach out asking how they can get some for their shop or how they can sell it for us. You know, I've had people at manufacturers. We just got back from Easter Jeep Safari. I think I had 40 magazines with me. I have zero now.
Nice.
Handed out. And I've gotten 4 or 5 emails from companies saying, hey, we took a look on it, you know, when we got home, or we read it on the plane, or we passed it around. You know, everybody loves it. How can we work together? And so we're a baby magazine. We're not even walking yet. We're still in diapers and all that, but we're getting there. And with the support of the, all the enthusiasts out there and people who are listening to the podcast and telling your friends, we would love to have the support, because I think you'll be really impressed with what we're doing with OVR.
Looking forward to checking it out.
All right. I'm going to wrap the show up, Ross, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
We're way over our time. So.
We tend to do that.
Stop talking. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's why. Well, that's one of the reasons we like having you on. It's like we just have to wind you up and let you go. Like, it's not a lot of work for us.
There's so much to talk about. It's been a busy stretch. So it's nice to be able to get it all out now. Right. It's this is cathartic for me. Thanks, guys.
It's like group therapy.
communal group therapy. Jesus. Everybody gets your shit and air it out.
Well, and Sean and I recently did dirt therapy, Ross, so you just got to get in on that side of it, and then it'll be
rub it in better.
I'll be jealous.
God, it's killing me.
No one's forcing you to live on the East Coast.
I know. I got 100 horsepower ATV that I have Polaris some reviews of that's just fucking digging its claws into my brain, but
life
has not been conducive to
spring. Will come eventually, bud. You'll be all right,
homie. It's straight up summer already. It was 19. We didn't get spring. Anyways,
well, sweet.
Yeah,
you can rate and review the show wherever you listen to a podcast. Oh, there was one somebody asked me on the rally about a new one. I gotta look that one up again. I made a note. I put it on my phone. A new podcast streaming service thing.
Platform?
Like, yeah, they were like, are you on there? And I was like, I got to look. I put it in a lot of places. So I got to check that one. So you can still like and subscribe on YouTube. Follow Sean P. Holman on Instagram. And then Use for Adventure. Adventure Jeep, which is just ADV Jeep. ORV Mag. Truck Show Podcast. Did I miss one?
No, that's about it. I mean, I've also got the Odd Ford if you want to follow really
old, that's right.
Mapped out a flat fender that is in perpetual metal fixing. That's a fun one. I haven't done it a lot. It's been at the shop for a while. I hope to I'm going to exercise my visitation rights next week when I bring the shop some more money to weld stuff on it. So
It's rolling tetanus.
Definitely is.
but that one's got a family connection, right?
Yeah, that was actually the very first 4x4 I ever drove. It was at my uncle's ranch out in Anza, California. And he just got to a point where it had been stored in a container on the property for, 15 or 20 years, hadn't been driven. And, 2 years before he told me to come get it, he's like, I'm kind of thinking about getting rid of it. None of my kids want it. I know you've got a connection to it. So would you be interested? Yeah. So a couple years later, he's like, all right, I'm ready. Come pick it up. And so I did. And then I got it home and I went, oh my, this is way worse than I thought it was. So
just bit off a little more.
Just trying to get it drivable again. I was really upset because I wanted to make it out to Moab for the vintage flat fender run out there this year, but we'll aim for next year. So
Mm-hmm. Pull full David Tracy and just throw everything you got at it and limp it there.
Yeah,
right. Don't do that. Yeah. David is rescheduled, but don't do that. Like he's David, coming on the show soon, but don't do that.
Man with stories to share. Yeah.
I'm getting too old for that shit. I still like air conditioning and a nice pleasant experience to go places.
No roof is air conditioning, right?
I'm too old for that.
Yeah, you're just go fast. You're not too old for that, Ross. You're still young. You're still very young.
Hey, on the quads, AC just means going faster. So
right, exactly.
My gray beard says different.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's coming in slowly.
Yeah. Wake up one morning and it'll be mostly gray. You go, what the hell happened? Nobody told me.
Exactly. Sweet. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate
you guys having me back. I'm happy to come back anytime. And this was great. Like I said, it's cathartic because sometimes I've got so much going on, I have to take inventory of it. So your show has allowed me to go through each of those things and try and figure it all out.
Well, that's good. We enjoyed listening to it, all the stories, and I'm sure next time you come on, you'll have a bunch more.